Hello, everyone. This is Mike J. I'm with Leadership University, and we are in the middle of our summer sprint where we are discussing the selective dynamic inquiry system skills experience. And we are already at our third demo, and we are learning a lot, and I hope you are learning a lot. And what I want to do is get you into that demo real quick, and then we'll have a little bit of time to debrief this particular demo. Let's go ahead and queue up our ChatGPT client and see what's going on. Typical conversation. How are you today? And I just put anything you want to start with. Again, I'll debrief this later. But what I'm doing there is I'm pushing the lead back to the client. And then I'll just go right back into the sequence. Again, I don't want the lead. Is there something important? And then I'll just go ahead and have it decide to see if it can prioritize. And I'll go ahead and use the word motivating. I was going to put now, but I think I'll just leave it the context open. Let the entity choose the context. And then one of the things that we teach in the program about balance, in other words, whenever you feel that the tension shifts to you and that you may not want it, we can ask the person being helped, we can ask them to say more. And I would be very careful with this. If you say more, you have created an interrogatory, even though you did not use who, what, when, where, why, and how. Because you then have communicated that you are in the lead and need more information. In this particular case, the only information we need is to reveal the underlying patterns of why this is important and motivating. So I'm going to drop this in. I don't like to use it, but in this particular case, it came up for me right away because I don't understand the conditions around the pattern that it apparently is important and motivating to the person being helped here. And I want to let that run one more time. So I'm going to say more. And then I'm not going to say that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to change it. I'm going to shift that pressure over onto the person being helped. I don't want it. If I say more, tell me more, can you explain those types of things? There's a tendency for the pressure to still be on my side, and it doesn't need to be there because what you're doing is setting up the tension in this opportunity so that you can understand potential. as to where you want to go to meet the person in terms of what it is they're doing. So we want them to reveal that. And it's interesting that the person being helped here revealed conditions around the pattern, because that's very nebulous, like cloudy, like uncertain. And therefore, it assumes that what we're seeing is the tip of the iceberg. And in this particular case, you may feel a lot of tension and pressure to pretend like you know and then make an assumption and move on. And my sense is not to do that. Make sure that you restrain your needs to know until you're really sure that you need to know. So I'm going to just test it, and this would be called a ping. Do you want to say more? Because saying more has not been tabled yet. So I'm going to find out if the person being helped is willing to volunteer information. So let's go ahead and try this, see what happens. Okay, this is interesting. Now I get to introduce something really interesting to you. I love the words and so, but they must always be spoken as a single word with a pause. Therefore, you do not assume capability. In other words, you may see potential, but you cannot assume capability or capacity. They must be demonstrated. So, in this particular case, what I'm going to do is go ahead and give the person being helped permission to continue. Because remember, this entity, this person that being helped here as a demo, is actually dealing with all of the canon, let's say, the rules, the first principles, all the things like that in this system. Therefore, as a background, it's almost like me trying to coach myself because I've trained it on all this quote unquote rules and principles and stuff like that. So what I see in the background is that this thing is struggling to model back to me what it is learning based on what I taught it, which makes the demos a little bit more complex because of the nature of it knows, I know, but you don't know. Okay, so that's the kind of thing. So you would not be able to respond the way I'm responding, and I would not expect you to because I'm at a totally different level. I'm at a totally different voltage, vertical, oblique, lateral, and time with age in this system. So a new person or a person who's had experience kind of doing inquiry, I would not expect at all to respond the way I'm doing. But what I'm trying to teach you about this system and why it's different is showing you the way I would respond. And it's different than what this particular entity has been pre-trained on and actually reinforced on versus what we have learned over a period of time to work with a person in development. Again, that probably is a goal. Remember, we said in the very first session, we're going to teach them to fish, not just give fish. Nothing wrong with giving fish, but there's also nothing wrong with teaching them to fish. And so in this particular case, we want the person being helped to do the work. And if they can't do the work, that's a signal to us about PCC, potential, capacity, capability. And it also helps us understand where to go to meet them. So in this particular case, I'm going to keep it real simple. I'm going to keep the tension there, not on me, but on the person being helped. And I'm going to watch them work. Okay. I want to watch the problem solving, potential, capacity, and capability of the problem finding and the problem solving system. Okay. Less is more. Very important that you understand that, because the more you project, Your own thinking, reasoning, rules, first principles, values, whatever it is, the more you're stepping in to commingle your PCC with their PCC. And once we do that in the third space, then we cannot hold people accountable because we're part of that space. So the idea would be is to step back, open up the third space, and allow them to get in the middle of that third space while you restrain yourself from getting in there with them until it's the right time. There is a time where you get in there, you hold their hand, you guide them, you lead them, you do all that stuff, but it's not until you know where they are, because if you do that prematurely, you project capability into that third space that is only yours, not theirs. You got to be very careful with that. Coaching under the influence of your own system is the most dangerous thing that helpers can do, because we tend to project our PCC and we do not meet them where they are. We meet them where we are. And as soon as you dissolve the helping function scaffolding, the cues, the scaffolding, the support and lift that you're providing through that projection of capability, the person regresses back to the level that they were, because in support, we can actually work one level of verticality higher than we can without support. You remove that support, and where are they going to go? They're going to go back to where they were. Well, you did not help them there. You helped them where you were. So I cannot stress this enough, that less is more, but also there are very valid reasons to keep that third space until we need to get in there, pretty much them in terms of what PCC looks like, what their my team looks like, money, information, time, energy, attention, and motivation, what we see them building as right action, how they're dealing with the culture, conditions, requirements at a very nasty environment of VUCA, which is volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. So again, that I know I'm talking about a lot of things at once, but you can go back and you can re-listen and you can slow this down so there's not so much cognitive load. And you can think about each one of these concepts as I'm talking about them as they're coming up for me. And this is a little bit different than what we did in the after action review, because I'm giving you sort of what my thinking and reasoning process is before I actually put in to the response. So in this particular case, as I began this, and so mean a lot. And means that you can add things to it. So means you can take everything that you had there and sew it into a more defined or even a more clear response in terms of what it is you're doing. And of course, that clarity really, really helps us. Remember, from the Coach 2 model in this system, we bring connection, clarification, and commitment to right action in. So those are the three core competencies of the Coach 2 model. But in helping, we sort of let that run in the background. We don't really need to worry so much whether those competencies are being practiced at a very high level. Although if you do dynamic inquiry well, it will in fact be at a very sophisticated level. So in this particular case, let's see the response. Do you want to say more? Only a little. The conditions may show whether the first step is difficult because of the person, the pattern, or the situation asking more than is actually available. This is a very interesting response. I am having too much fun with this method, although it may be not the best thing for absolute beginners. So I'll have to think about that as we go through time. But this is getting out the teachable points of view and the way I have built the system and codified it in my mind over the last 4 decades of work. Okay. So in this particular case, what I'm going to do in this particular case, I don't think I have enough information, and I'm going to reserve so for the next one. So I'm going to use and here. Let's see what it does. And that matters. It's interesting it repeated, because it's almost like it's giving itself permission to expand. Remember, and expands, so contracts. People are naturally expanders, and naturally contractors, and that comes from the Myers-Briggs type indicator. And if you don't know what your dominant function is, it's a little bit difficult to tell whether you're an expander or a contractor. But the fourth letter, how you deal with the outer world, generally helps guide us in terms of expansion and contraction. And I should probably, I think I have one of those videos somewhere, but we should probably find a way to link it here, at least the ideas of how do you tell if someone is a natural responder and generates expansion or contraction. Okay, and that matters because the next move should fit what is actually constraining the step, not what we first assume is constraining it. So what the system is doing and has done over the last two or three sessions, where I'm very intrigued because this is showing me the depth of learning and complexity that the system is responding with in relation to the inquiry and its own understanding of being taught the inquiry. Very interesting. It's like early on, I would try to teach my kids a lot of this stuff, and the only thing that was really good that came out of it was that they tended to use it on me when I wasn't paying attention. So it's almost like that reminded me of that deja vu response with my kids in earlier years. Okay, so what I'm going to do here is rather than get cute, because I'm watching the person being helped here in the demo, I'm watching them work. Okay. And as long as they're working, I don't really want to disturb that too much. It's when they can't work or they start recycling scripts that you want to notice that and probably get off that tack that you may be writing. In this particular case, I've done a lot of work with explaining sort of and so, and I probably need to do more. But in this particular case, I'm going to go ahead and let it see. Even though I do not know what it's drawing behind the board that I can't see the curtains, I don't know what's going on back there. It doesn't matter because as long as it appears to me that what the person being helped is able to show me, and it has PCC that it's using or utilizing or setting up problem finding and problem solving in what is a CAPC approach, and I need to explain that. Considerate, appreciative, purposeful, sustainable, ethical, and effective approach. That we call that CAPC, okay? The idea that you can capitalize all those letters and try to another mnemonic way to remember it. And that matters because the next move should fit what is actually constraining the step, not what we first assume is constraining it. So here we go. Let's see what it does. It's interesting that we have a dual system. I should read that for those of you that may be listening to audio. I asked so, it came back and used the term so. The useful place to begin may be the constraint, not the step. Very interesting. If we can see, notice it uses see. If we can see, it doesn't say hear, it doesn't say sense, it doesn't say taste, you know, those kinds of things. It uses see here. That's a pickup that you can use because it may be, and in this particular case, you can't call an entity per se, you know, that it see is important. Seeing is the way it learns because in forms of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, that was very popular 50 years ago. Now begins to reveal how our neural nets are activated in terms of what they prefer in taking in information and then sharing information. So you notice things like this. If we can see, Okay, now we're talking about seeing what is actually limiting movement. The step may become clearer without forcing it. Okay, now I could do a lot of things right here, but I don't want to do very much. I told you less is more. Where are we in terms of IMAL? We talked about importance, we talked about motivating. I'm going to go ahead and run the urgency thing. And all I'm saying here is there something you need to do now? I'm just checking urgency. Okay, it says not yet. It feels more useful to stay with the constraint long enough to see whether it's real, assumed, or borrowed from the situation. This is very interesting, a comment. It almost has to be debriefed in and of itself because actually, what I have spent 3+ years doing with GPT is trying to get it to understand first impressions, what they are, noticing, recognizing, relating, and regulating responses that it might have or it might nudge or suggest or recommend. And in this particular case, it has somehow gotten a hold of this track in a way that it doesn't think that the demo needs to go any differently than it's going, although it would be a lot easier for all of you if it went to simpler things. And I'm putting this in the transcript so it will read it. And then, for instance, it gave a list in the very beginning when we set this up, resistant to write an email or haven't done something on my calendar or my to-do list isn't done or something like that. Real simple things that we meet in everyday life. But this is helpful to me because it's given me the opportunity to take the model and use it at a more sophisticated level, but also to give you the teachable points of view as to why I reason the way I do and what it is we're trying to do. The idea is to meet the person where they are. In this particular case, my goal is to meet in this demo the person where they are. So what I want to do is I've checked urgency. Is there something? I did importance, I did motivation, I checked urgency. You don't have to do them in order. I'm just going back to the model. In other words, the reason you can go back to the model of IMAL, it's a map. And so if you get lost, what do? You pull out the map. And so it's very easy to understand because remember, we're tracking this whole set of rules and first principles as a good conversation. What makes up a good conversation? Well, we've determined the rules for a good conversation are importance, motivation, urgency, leverage, and low-hanging fruit. Okay. So in this particular case, I've got urgency. Now let's take a shot, even though we don't have to go in the order. We could go for a single step. I could say this. And that's a different way of looking at IMO, okay? It's more like to look before a plan forms. A plan would come later after the real constraint is clear. Now I can go back. Remember I taught you in the very first one? Got to put a pause with it. Remember, it keeps using the word real. Okay, very interesting. So, in other words, you're getting two forms of teaching here. You're getting abstract teaching and you're getting more concrete teaching, which is very interesting in terms of complexity. The only thing that's interesting, though, or more interesting is this is coming at what I would say the meta level. So what it has done, both I and the person being helped, in this case the entity, have ingested the rules and first principles of the S DISX system. Okay. And what we're showing you, remember, we're breaking out of it, what could be a long conversation or interaction, an opening, a single opening, and we're working that opening. Okay, that's what we call it, selective. We don't just use this all the time because it'll drive everyone crazy. But what it will do, if you've been following along in these three sessions, it will begin to reveal to you the system about the system in this case. And that's why I can make the deductions that I'm making about, okay, it's working. Well, what is it working according to? Well, it's working according to what it has been trained and reinforced on in our system of S dis X. So it's actually modeling back the way in which we are taught to one, select, and two, use dynamic adaptation, dynamic inquiry in a way that allows us to look at not just the first order consequence, not just meeting the need, but what is it about meeting the need that's important? And this is what you're getting here. Yes, a real constraint is the thing that actually limits movement now. So what it's asking you to do is to go up the causal chain and or down the causal chain, it doesn't matter which way, or go to the side, whatever the causal chain you use, and begin to look at what's actually limiting movement now, not the story about the limit. That's what most people get. Remember, we're taught to reveal ourselves in narratives and story. We do not necessarily, objectively, are we able to tell you about us? We usually do it indirectly, and it's subjective. And that's what a story's for. So in this particular case, it's saying, well, what I want to do is I want to look beyond the limits of movement, and I want to look to see what is limiting that movement. Not the story about the limit, not the old pattern around the limit. Again, this requires a certain amount of self and other knowledge. The actual condition that makes the next move harder or unavailable. Now, I've already used and so, and I'm going to try something else now. We call those wonders, or that thing you do, the movie, Oneder. They spelled wonders O. Neders, and they didn't want to spell it Wonders. So somebody goes out to introduce them, and they say Oneders, and that has always stuck in my mind about these short little things that we can use that are wonders, but to think of them as an Oneder, you never forget it. And I'm just checking in here. I'm going to close this pretty quick. But I'm just checking in here. Okay, interesting. I just said that is. In other words, I'm asking the person being helped to point at that, to tell me what that is. I don't know what that is. And in this particular case, it doesn't either. It may be time, energy, permission, clarity, or fit, but naming it too soon would be a guess. This is very interesting. When you work at this level, it can be very frustrating. And the thing that you want to be careful about is that when you feel frustration, any of the other types of emotions that come up, fear, angst, excitement, begin to identify, all those kind of things like that, that's a signal to you. In other words, that's a signal to you that you may be getting too much associated with this process. The idea would be is to be dispassionate about it, both yourself and your emotions, as well as what's taking place in the session that triggers you or the person being helped. So again, remaining in this disassociated place or this place of dispassion is very important because you'll get pulled in. So in other words, you want it to hurry up. You want it to say what it's going to say. I mean, we're doing a demo here. Why can't it act right and just do what it's supposed to do? Why is it using all these very complex, cryptic ideas? At the same time, it's beautiful because what it's showing me is that it is learning. Now, whether it's learning because it's doing next token association with a sentence that we use because that's what it's expected to produce, that you can't say. But it is learning based on all the things that I've taught it and am teaching while I'm using it right now. It's learning. And so that's a very interesting thing. I'm going to go ahead and set this up for the close because this has gone long enough. And at the same time, I need to help you understand how do you see to close. And the best way to see to close is to ask if it's usually a good time. Now, remember, you can seed a close and you can do other things. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to seed the close, but I'm going to go back to IMO and leverage. I'm going to ask it this. I'm struggling whether I want to say, is there a single leverage point? I would stop there. I'm going to go ahead and stop there. We could contextualize it and put here or in what you said or things like that. But whenever you do that, you set context and you don't know if that's the context that's right or not. So you own that. They don't. So that's, you want to be very careful about setting context. You want them to set the context. And once they set the context, which has already been set here, you want to be very careful about going outside it, unless you think that there's a more important context or some context that has more leverage. So let's go ahead and feed it this. I'm actually starting the process of seeding the close. Okay, let me do this. Could you close with an example? Now, remember, what am I doing? Well, I'm doing several things here. First, I'm looking for low-hanging fruit because I haven't tried that one in IMO yet. And we want this to be a good conversation, you know, 5 out of 5, especially since we're teaching it to you. So, what I'm doing there is I'm looking for both leverage. But I'm also looking for an example which could be used as low-hanging fruit to let me know that we've had a digestion of the process of importance, motivation, urgency, and leverage in this process. Let's see what happens. And remember, I asked it if it could close. Now, if it didn't want to close, it could say that, you know, this is not a good time to close for me. I need a few more questions. I need more experience with this, you know, in the S dis X, X is the experience. Okay. Yes. Example, a person says, I need to write the proposal, but the real constraint may not be writing. It may be that they do not yet know who the proposal is really for, what decision it must support, or how much energy they actually have today. So the first step is not write the proposal. The first step may be name the real constraint before choosing the action. This is brilliant. I mean, I wish I've coached a lot of CEOs and I've never had one be able to do this kind of work. Exactly. In other words, what we're trying to teach in the system that we have, along with our prime algorithm, which I think I may have mentioned, but I maybe haven't given it to you. I want to make sure we do that pretty soon so I can use it to point out certain things. And that is, this is pointing towards self-knowledge. In other words, what is it in the overall process of creating right action? Is it the writing, the actual writing the proposal? Is it sitting down and saying, okay, I'm going to write the proposal now? Or is it saying, well, what am I, why am I demotivated? What is motivating me to resist? Why do I think I need more time? Could it be because I'm pressure prompted and therefore I don't have enough pressure yet to write the proposal? Could it be that I'm really not writing is not my thing, and therefore to sit down and write a proposal may be way beyond my current motivation and even my capacity or capability, in which case there are ways you can get around that. But the thing is that's really an interesting teaching. Name the real constraint before choosing the action. Now, in this particular case, let me tell you what it just did. It just reaffirmed the model that we resist transaction. We resist transaction. Why? Well, this is the very reason right here. It's very easy to transact, and a lot of times people just want to check a box so they can feel achievement or so they can feel like they've gotten something done, but they actually go into what we call a process of emergenics, which causes more problems than they had before they actually did the action. So we want to understand in this case what is the real constraint before choosing action, because what's going to happen is that the real constraint is going to show up in the action. That may not be such a good thing. And therefore, discussing the constraint before we write the proposal and cleaning that up may be the best thing that we can do for right action in this particular case. So, this whole session has been very interesting in terms of how it chose the responses that it did. But the interesting thing is it allowed me to get out a lot more of the teachable points of view that you need to understand as to why you don't just keep talking, why you don't use who, what, when, where, why, and how all the time. What's the reason for using IMO? Why do we want to create a good conversation? Well, why do we want to teach people to fish? Why don't we just hand them out fish? It's a lot easier most of the time. So why do we even work on things like transformation? I'll write down something here. I'm going to write it and then I'm going to erase it. You should know something that is a teachable point of view is called trends. I'm not asking you to remember this, but it's really important because what it stands for is transsynthetic, which kind of means like it's made up. Okay. Let's see if I can spell it. Transsynthetic, only one S. Relational, emergent networks. Okay. Now, I'm not going to send that, so I'll hit shift return. Here's the seven T's. There's seven T's in there. Now, I'm going to show you why these are important in just a minute. Okay. So the first one is transcription. Now, transcription is whether or not we actually are able to reproduce what it is that someone said. You know that communications game, the telephone game that they play in corporate communication workshops, where someone, the facilitator, will tell someone something and then they'll go tell it to a line of people, and each person in the line tells what they heard from the other to the other. And when you get to the end, the person says, okay, here's what you said. And it's nothing at all like what it was from the first person. I don't know if you know that game, but that's a game that's played. It shows you this process that oftentimes we don't transcribe very well. The second thing is, let me make sure I don't push the wrong button here, or otherwise ChatGPT will freak out. Translation. Now, this comes about, and especially now where we've got so much new change, novel change. Translation is very difficult. If you don't believe me, just listen to a software engineer talk about how easy it is to do some of this stuff. And you'll go, what are they talking about? You have to know all this stuff in order to be able to actually transcribe what it says and have it mean anything. And that's translation. So a lot of times people can transcribe something from the environment or about themselves subjectively into an object form of transcription, but they can't translate it very well. So in other words, these are problem areas where we find problems coming up in terms of these emergent networks, and we have to sort of step back from them. The next one is transaction. And this is what mostly the forms of helping do, is they stay in this transaction area. And what we're saying to you is resist transaction before you're clear on everything else. And that's exactly what came out of this helping session. Okay. Now the next one is once you get transaction, you always trigger some form of transition, whether that's in you, the others, the system, whatever. And then in transitions, we always get an opportunity for transformation. Okay. And then sort of the flywheel goes, if you transform, then actually you're able to transcend. Well, what is it you transcend? Well, you transcend the lower level. Okay. In other words, you transcend the, let me raise this up. You transcend the level that you were at. Remember, problems are created at a level that you are, but the solution is usually created at a level where you're not. And that's the difficult thing about all of this stuff about these emergent networks, and they're talking about what happens out there in the world, in reality, in constraint land, in CCR at VUCA. What happens out in the world? Well, we've got this process going on. So, in other words, all the problems can come from these T's. And then the next one is the ability to take the information that you get and convert it into another form of energy, movement. Okay. That's the seven T's. And I'm not asking you to learn that. I'm just asking you to be aware that that flywheel exists and that problems can occur in every one. So if you're trying to get someone to move, when in fact the transcription is the problem, well, it doesn't make any sense because you got to go back to where the problem originated in transcription and translation before the transaction shows no transduction because you don't get movement. That's why we meet people where they are. That's why Arduris said in BDEX, behaviors, design, knowledge, skills, and experience, and system enablement or empowerment have to be in place in order for a person to actually replicate or get good advice that they can actually use. In other words, we call that actionable advice. So you can't transduce the information that you have, the motivation that you have, the things that you do until you get that very specific set of behaviors. It's designed in a causal framework, whereas if you do that behavior, you will in fact get whatever it is that has been designed, and then you have the knowledge and skills and experience. You may not be able to write a proposal because you've never written one before. You may not have the KSEs. And in some cases, the system may not empower that. The system is has an immune response to innovation. It doesn't want you to innovate. It wants you to follow the rules. So again, there's all kinds of things going on. So problems appear from the seven T's in this sort of flywheel. And what happens to you is that in these networks, they can go sideways on you real fast, especially in a very how would I say it? An environment that requires a lot of adaptation, which is the one we have right now, because it's constantly changing and it's changing way faster than most of us realize. So I wanted to add that before we ended the thing, because I think about it from time to time and I think, oh, that's way too complex. But it's really not when you begin to understand what's happening. So we let me do the final thing here. Let me go ahead and erase this so we don't make ChatGPT crazy. And go ahead and do the formal close. And you can do that in a lot of ways. I'll try to model as many different ways as I can. Okay, and I said good to close here. It's fun to have ChatGPT in this form is fun to play with because it seems like, they've built into the values of the thing. Oh, you've got to act smart on the way out. So it creates a little flywheel here for us. Not mainly conditions around the pattern, constraint, real versus assumed constraint, leverage point, example. That gives us enough for the AAR without overextending the demo. Very, very interesting stuff. I'm going to stop there because there's a lot of cognitive load in this, and the way I did it was different than the last time, but I wanted to show you the process that I was going through and thinking of it. Now, ordinarily, I made this process 45 minutes to get what? 10 pieces of inquiry. You automatically begin to assimilate this stuff as you begin to learn it. You'll learn that less is more. You'll learn to slow down. That's our music for closing. The things that you will pick up from listening to this work and just playing it over, you will actually begin to pick up these rules and first principles and all these things, some of which I haven't covered, like do no harm flashed in my mind. That's one of the things that this system was built around. And it was done so that new people using this system would not do harm, both to themselves and others. And that's why I thought in the very beginning, as they started trying to teach the chat bot that I was playing with back in January of 2023, how to do this so that ultimately it would improve PDIM, which means, hey, this thing's not going to kill us because one of the first principles is do no harm. So again, this is a close to the session. I appreciate you being here. Play this over, stop it, think about it, come back to it. Very difficult with this kind of cognitive load to parse it all at once, but over a period of time, I'll repeat certain things and it'll make sense to you. And you'll also see the advantages of this system because it can be extremely powerful, especially if you pick and choose the in the selective nature of when you use the system. It can be really powerful, even though less is more. Okay, that's it. We're going to close for today. Thank you for being here. Mike J., Leadership University. Come see us.